Welcome to my podcast, Stories at Will. Thank you for finding me. My name's William Lewis. This is a story from my first book. It's about two cruel sisters and a younger sister who seeks help from her guinea pig. It's called Cry Baby. Oh, Flo, don't you get it? Oh, Flo, you're so stupid. She's so stupid. She won't know. Don't ask her. Oh, look at her. She's sulking again. Are you sulking again, Flo? But Florence wasn't sulking. It was rage. Suppressed rage. Intense, painful, heart-stabbing rage. Though on the surface, she did look as if she could be sulking. Apart from the small drops of blood on her lips as she bit them. She wouldn't cry. She'd cried enough for them, the cruel sisters, and she wasn't going to do that again. She just focused on revenge. It's never easy to be the youngest of three sisters. Throughout Florence's short life, she'd been the continual butt of small acts of cruelty and humiliation from Phoebe and Tabitha, just 4 and 5 years older than her, but enough to make her the outsider. She sought escape and solace in the stories she read, and her guinea pig, Hetty. When she was 11, she read a story by Saki Srednivashtar. In it, a boy, Conradin, worships his pet ferret as a god, Srednivashtar, and prays for it to bring destruction to his enemies, in particular his cruel aunt and guardian, Mrs. de Rop. At the end of the story, she is killed by the ferret. Florence began to wonder whether she might attempt something similar with Hetty the guinea pig. She didn't want her sisters killed, and anyway, guinea pigs are peaceable creatures. But if she could just maybe unsettle them a bit, so that they wouldn't bother her so much. Every day then, when she went to Hetty's hutch, she took especially nice pieces of carrot, dandelions and tomatoes, which she knew were Hetty's favourites. As she fed them to Hetty, she chanted, "Hetty, Hetty, protect me, Hetty, bother my sister so they won't bother me. Hetty, Hetty, protect me, Hetty, bother my sister so they won't bother me." And as Hetty chomped on the carrots, Florence knew that somehow Hetty understood. The sisters shared a bedroom. Florence noticed that Phoebe and Tabitha's sleeping patterns began to change. Through the night, they shifted restlessly in their beds, sometimes grinding their teeth and sometimes moaning in pain and fear. Florence heard them talking in their sleep. "No, Hetty, no! Keep off, keep away!" After a few weeks of this, they would wake in the morning, looking pale and tired. They drifted about listlessly and tried to postpone bedtime. They no longer had any energy to boss and bully Florence, which, of course, suited Florence very well. And every day, she would visit Hetty's hutch with carrots, dandelions, and tomatoes. She changed the chant. It became, "Hetty, Hetty, you protect me deep in the dreams of my dreadful sisters. Hetty, Hetty, you protect me deep in the dreams of my dreadful sisters." Yet, about a month or so later, Florence noticed a change. That night, Phoebe and Tabitha slept peacefully and still, all through the night. No more tossing and turning, no more tooth grinding, or calling out in their sleep. When they got up in the morning, they looked and sounded refreshed. Phoebe called across to Florence, "Hey, slow coach, time you're up. Time to go down and feed your damn guinea pig." "That's right," said Tabitha, "and don't forget the carrots." Florence felt a deep chill. She knew something had changed, something was wrong. Still in her nightdress, she ran downstairs to see Hetty. The hutch door was already open, and she could see Hetty lying there, cold and stiff. Around her mouth were some dark, wet stains of blood, and her mouth was stuffed with carrots, which had obviously suffocated her. Florence heard noises behind her and turned to see Phoebe and Tabitha grinning Flo, come on, said Phoebe. It's only a guinea pig, isn't it, Tab? Yes, just a guinea pig, said Tabitha. Oh, look, she's crying. Cry, baby, cry, baby, cry, baby. But Florence knew those tears were tears of rage. She bit her lip again, the first time she'd done that for weeks, and tasted the blood again. She picked up cold Hetty and cradled her. She would have her revenge. She didn't know how, but she knew she could do it. She owed it to her sisters. And, like them, the revenge would be harsh, bitter, and terrible. The second story today is one of the first ones I wrote. It's about a character who wants to be more than just a bit part player in stories. We'll meet him again in some later stories. It's called The Trademark Omelette of Death. Good title, eh? Roger stretched his long legs, smoothed the crumpled flannel of his trousers, and adjusted his sports jacket. Tapping the dottle from his pipe, he looked around the empty room and said, "Inspector, this may not be relevant, but just before the clock struck 9, I heard a faint scraping on the kitchen window." At that moment, a shot rang out and Roger crumpled to the floor. "Look, Roger," said the narrator, "you'll have to do better than that if you want to make it as a fully rounded character in a story. Everything about it is cliché, what you're wearing, what you say. No wonder the room is empty, and you get shot in the first paragraph. Now, do try a bit harder this time." Roger unclipped his cycle clips and locked his yellow bicycle to the lamppost. As he turned, the hearse slowly passed him. He unlocked his bike and wheeled it back down Charlotte Street.
"Is that it?" said the narrator.
Yes, said Roger. "I thought you'd like the bicycle clips and the hearse."
"Well, I do sort of," said the narrator. "But there's not much about you. Not much to keep you in the story, is there?"
Not really, agreed Roger. "Look, Roger," said the narrator, "if you want to get cast as a major character, you've really got to grab the reader's attention. Something that's recognisable, but out of the ordinary. Think about it, Roger. You need to be the turning point, the linchpin, the narrative spigot. Now, dear, have another try at that one with the cycle clips." Sweating heavily, Roger de Grucci panted up the hill, pedalling hard and fast. In the hot sunlight, the diving suit chafed under his paint-stained overalls. 10 minutes to go before the cortege was due in Charlotte Street. But he should just make it. There was the corner, and the newsagents, and the familiar gas stove. With a harsh squeal from the brake pads, he tumbled off the yellow bike and threw it against the newspaper stands. A strident headline caught his eye. "Frogman assassin suspected in gangland murder." No time for that now. He stepped into the adjacent alleyway, took the frying pan from his rucksack, cracked 2 eggs, and started cooking his trademark weapon, the omelette of death.
Roger, dear, broke in the narrator, "that's all very well. And I do appreciate the level of detail. But, Roger, I don't mean to sound unkind, but it's nonsense. Frogman assassin on a bicycle. The trademark omelette of death. You got to take people with you. It's not enough to be a rounded character. There's got to be at least some degree of plausibility in the narrative."
Roger stood sadly on the empty page. His shoulders bowed. A look of hopelessness crossed his face.
I like that, said the narrator, "a look of hopelessness. Now you're getting the idea of this. Come on then, dear. One more try."
When Roger Dimkins woke up one morning,
He found he'd been transformed into a giant insect.
Hope you enjoyed those two stories. Thanks for listening. I'll be putting new stories on Stories at Will every week or so. That's all for this time. Find me again soon at Stories at Will. This is William Lewis, looking forward to reading for you next time.